Welcome to She Says Unplugged, the podcast where we dive deep into the world of female leadership in the private equity SaaS industry. I'm your host, Christine Meslin, and I'm on a mission to spotlight the incredible female CEOs who are making waves in our industry. Join us as we embark on a journey to explore the triumphs, challenges, and pivotal moments in the careers of 12 extraordinary female leaders. Over the course of 12 episodes, you'll hear firsthand from these trailblazers as they share their insights, experiences, and the secrets to their success. It's my pleasure to host today's episode with entrepreneur Nicole Alvino, CEO of First Up. First Up are a SaaS platform in the employee communications and engagement space, formed in 2021 through the merger of Social Chorus and Dynamic Signal. Nicole co-founded Social Chorus almost 16 years ago, and in 2020, Sumeru Equity Partners took a majority stake. Under Nicole's leadership, First Up has grown to a $100 million revenue business with a global team of 330. Today, we sit down with Nicole to explore her personal journey from her entrepreneurial beginnings to raising three boys and her current role as CEO of First Up. Join us as we uncover the insights and lessons learned from Nicole's inspiring story. Can you tell us more about your journey from your early career to founding First Up and what some of the pivotal moments and experiences were in shaping that journey?
Sure. And thanks for having me, Christine. So I had an interesting start to my professional journey. I started my career at Enron, working in structured finance, and frankly, working on some of the largest M&A transactions that were happening at the time in the late 90s. And then I was there when Enron went bankrupt. Some of my bosses actually went to jail. And so for me as a young professional, having gone through that experience, that to me made me go very much on an entrepreneurial path. And so I made a decision that I wanted to be able to control the ethics and the culture of a company, so an Enron type situation wouldn't happen again.
Is it fair to say that was kind of the inspiration for the creation of First Up?
Yeah, well, First Up is the second company that I founded. So I was actually living in London at the time, living and working in London when the Enron bankruptcy happened. And so I knew that I needed some time and space. So I think I call it my mini walkabout. I took a backpack and traveled through parts of the South Pacific and Australia and New Zealand. And then I went back to business school. So I went to business school at Stanford and really used that time to work through some different business plans, some ideas that I had, spent a lot of time getting to know different entrepreneurs, learning their stories, meeting with angel investors, and really focused on what would be the company. I knew I wanted to start something. And so I focused on that piece whilst at Stanford and then started my first business, Derma Lounge. And then several years later, connected with who was my co-founder of the company that was what is now First Up. And so it's been, as always, an interesting journey to where we are now.
Your journey to founding and leading First Up is undoubtedly driven by a strong sense of purpose and passion. Where do you think your drive comes from?
I love impact. That's what drives me. There's just something about leaving the world in a better place than I came. I have three young boys. I want them to have a better experience. And so I'm focused on what are the things that I can do and that I can really invest in to have an outsized impact. And so when we think about what First Up is doing and really looking at the founding of it, the two challenges that we are really trying to solve, number one was to help reach the frontline worker. So 80% of the world's workforce does not sit in front of desk like you and I do. And those workers, especially a decade ago, were really disconnected from their employers. And they're the ones on the front line, whether it's building planes and cars and machines, delivering things, managing trains and rails. Those were the people who were really disconnected, and only 5% of any sort of tech spend was going to that section of the workforce. So it was really meant to kind of solve that problem and connect those workers. And then the other piece of it was really looking at the role that communication plays in any sort of company. And again, at that time, if you think about technology, the people who are managing communications and employee communications didn't really have great tech. And so we said, wow, there's a real opportunity to disrupt this place and really taking of what Marketo did for marketers and giving them a platform, a way to build and manage campaigns, really be able to use data to see what's happening. And so those two pieces were kind of the founding principles or the why behind what is now First Up. And both of those things are really about changing kind of the workers' lives, being connected to their employer, and also helping people do their job better and connect with the entirety of the workforce.
Brilliant. Thanks, Nicole. You've been in the industry a long time, and it's fair to say that you were one of the early innovators in this space. How would you say the industry has evolved over time?
Yeah, it's great. I think when we first really went and started on this journey, it was a mobile app. And that was something that was new as far as being able to connect with the frontline workforce. And so that was the initial entry point. And now what I love seeing just from, you know, kind of the space is looking at all the innovation we've seen in the consumer experience. And if you think about just how we connect with different brands and different things we're doing outside of work. So whether it's in a retail environment, whether we're doing our banking, if you think about how Amazon's completely transformed how we buy, right? They know who we are, when we need things, sometimes deliver things to us even before we know. And so that concept of really using data to help to personalize an experience and continue to understand kind of what a person needs and help to guide them on that journey. We're seeing that type of innovation, and this is what we're bringing to the employee experience and really taking the learnings and the best practices from that transformation in our consumer world and bringing that to work. And now, you know, too often we turn up to work and it's kind of old stodgy intranets and bad emails and nothing's really that accessible on mobile. And so it's been just really interesting to see how much there now there's just more investment and people really focusing. And I think, frankly, CEOs really understanding the need to be able to connect their entire workforce in a meaningful way to help them, you know, when they're more connected to the purpose of the company, to what their job means, of course, they're going to be more productive, do better work, and ultimately stay longer.
It's not very common for a founder to remain the CEO of a business the size of First Up, right? In many circumstances, we see a different skill set is required to take a business from zero to, say, 20 or 50 million than it is to take a business from 50 to 100 or 100 million plus. How have you navigated some of the more mature stages of business growth, and what adjustments or strategies have you implemented to ensure continued success as the CEO of First Up?
Yeah. Well, first, so I haven't always been the CEO. So a few years ago, the company that I co-founded was Social Chorus. And a few years ago, we merged with our largest competitor, Dynamic Signal. And then after that transaction, I became CEO. So it was very much as part of a scale up phase. And I will say that the people and the skill sets that you have in those early days, kind of the pre-5 million, finding product market fit, even getting to 10 and 20 are obviously very, very different. So last summer, we just crossed the $100 million mark. But now, you know, my charge to our company and really what we're excited about building is going from that 100 million to the 250 million, which is that next phase. And that really does require a different skill set from that scale up phase. And so what I've done, since I personally don't have all those experiences, is bring people to First Step who have led through that period and who really know how to build and grow in this stage. And so I love learning. I have a big growth mindset. And so I love surrounding myself by people, finding people who are better than me, especially in the different functions. And, you know, that's just made us stronger. And that's how we'll continue to grow and lead in this market.
So you've now got Sumeru Equity Partners on board as a majority shareholders. How do private equity investors differ from the venture capital investors in terms of their approach, their expectations, and, you know, their impact on the growth trajectory of a business in your experience?
Yeah, so Sumeru has been a great partner to me and us in this phase. And I think for me, looking at, you know, if you just look at the model of investment and the venture model is one where, you know, to oversimplify, of 20 of people in our portfolio, one's going to knock it out of the park, kind of provide the bigger return. And then therefore, there's an opportunity to have many, many different investments and many types of businesses and kind of manage from that portfolio model. And so with that, in my experience, there's been a little less involvement, you know, more kind of focused on the board level, perhaps helping with some recruiting, but really kind of focused on letting the team, you know, completely run and manage. And again, looking for that one of those large portfolios to really be the hit. I think what my experience from a growth equity partner like Sumeru is, you know, they have a smaller portfolio. And for them, it's really focused on, okay, how can we make sure that we're continuing to grow, manage the growth and profitability, which obviously in this market, those are the most valuable companies. You know, you've got to have that top line growth and do it profitably. And so really bringing in expertise and people who have done it before as well to work with our team and, you know, work through whether, you know, they were great partners when we were doing M&A, right? I don't have a corp dev team. And so that expertise to really help us out right now, the world of customer success and how do we really support our customers? We're doing some work around how to better serve our customers. We have 40 of the Fortune 100, so amazing customers. And we want to make sure that the journey we're guiding them along is very much focused on them and making sure that we can do that. And so there's, you know, a great operating partner who's working with us now in that process. So I think maybe a little more hands-on is the way to describe it. And I would describe it of, you know, in a good way. And it's a partnership. And I think that as private equity investors, you know, their model is different and they are investing in later stage companies. They're, you know, getting someone, whether it's from 30 to 60, 50 to 100, 100 to 250. And so kind of at those different models, or if you look at the kind of bigger firms that are more focused on leverage buyouts and things like that, that are much, much bigger than First Up is, you know, there's a different financial model there. But I've really enjoyed kind of this stage and setting us up for the next big phase of our growth.
Yeah, good. And you touched on M&A a little bit and how, you know, obviously Sumeru were very helpful there, given there's no corporate development department. I know you did make a big acquisition. You know, did the private equity help and get involved in the post-merger integration? Making the acquisition is one thing, but there's often lots of challenges that come after that.
Yeah. And I think, surrounding yourself by people who have kind of been there and done it before, I think that's always helpful. And I think for any CEO to have a network of people who you can draw on in different types of experiences. And so I think, you know, being with people who have done other types of M&A, just, you know, there are the nuts and bolts. And then for me, one of the biggest things for us was just the culture. We had two companies who were, you know, staunch competitors one day, and then the next day we're on the same team. And so that was the piece that, and, you know, no one can do that really other than the internal people, obviously led from the top, from me as the CEO, of really bringing the cultures together and making everyone really feel part of one team, the part of the exciting innovation of the future. And, you know, for us, we then had kind of two sets of customers. Some customers chose one over the other. And so then it was the time to bring all the customers together as well and continue to have our robust community of customers from the best brands in the world. And so it was, you know, just, I think that the time, and I won't underestimate the importance of really focusing on that integration piece and the people part of it, and helping people kind of move through the change curve, and getting and being kind of very, very excited about the go forward.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like you guys done a great job on the integration there, you know, bringing together two companies that are roughly the same size that were competitors is not a journey for the faint hearted.
Exactly. I'll write a book about that one day.
Can you share some key lessons you've learned along the way as a founder?
Yeah, I think for me, the key lessons, I would say, one, kind of never lose sight of the customer and spending time with customers. So I've always been very, very customer first. And I like to talk to customers every single day. I think that's especially in SaaS, you know, that our customers are who we serve. So I think never losing that finger on the pulse with them and really, really listening. And then on the other piece, really, it's doing the same with employees and people who have been with the company for many, many years. And then people who are new into the company. I just think it's so important to get different perspectives and also kind of understand what they're hearing from the field. If it's a kind of a sales focused role, what are they continuing to hear in the field, and being able to just stay really connected to the business. So I think that's because I'm a founder and I am so passionate about what we're doing and what we've built. I do like to have that connection. But I think as any leader, it is important to have that connection and really have your finger on the pulse. And obviously, based on my experience at Enron, being a leader who's very transparent with my team, authentic, that's also something that's really, really important to me and something that I've carried through with me during my journey at First Step.
Great to hear that insight. Thank you, Nicole. Diversity and inclusion are important topics in the workplace today, as we all know. How does First Step approach these aspects, and what steps have you taken to foster a diverse and inclusive culture?
Yeah, I think for me, it's the best ideas obviously come from diverse thinking, being able to solve, you know, big problems like what we're doing with our platform and really changing how we enable people to connect and feel included at their companies. So part of what we're doing just from a platform standpoint really does address diversity and inclusion. Internal in our team, I think it's a combination of being intentional around just talent and people we're bringing into the organization. So I've, you know, our leadership team is now half female executives. So that's something that I'm proud of, and also need to be intentional. And so I'll tell a story. When I was looking for a new chief product officer, I said, I really want to have a woman in the role. And I was adamant about that. I said, I know, you know, I can find the best person who, and also is a woman. And that was something that was really important to me as I continued to grow and scale the business. And so I ended up, our chief product officer is absolutely phenomenal. Her name's Cheryl Chavez. She actually built Marketo, was a very early employee there, moved to lead product. And then most recently was the chief product officer at Bloomreach, another customer experience platform. So she's kind of the perfect person on the planet to be our chief product officer, with all of that knowledge on the consumer experience and customer experience side of the house, bringing to the employee experience side. And so that, you know, and she's been a great leader for our team and for our customers. Our product's incredible under her leadership. And I think that's just an example of, I definitely needed to push my recruiter at times. And that was something that I did and was intentional in that way.
Brilliant. That really is great to hear. And Cheryl sounds incredible. What was your experience of the overall search? Was Cheryl the only female candidate on the shortlist, or did you have several to choose from?
Yeah, no, I had several finalists with different skill sets, and that's the thing, when you push and you continue to push, that's when things change. And I think if we really step back and say, you know, how do we really drive more change, having more women in executive, more women CEOs, having more women who are in executive teams, it's only going to happen when you have people who are pushing and driving that. Because I think it's all too easy to just, it's not that you're settling for less. Again, it's getting the best person and also having some additional guidelines. And I think that just kind of forces, I'd say, getting to the best outcome in this case, which was the best person to run our product.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. This is something that keeps coming up for us at SheSass. And this is just another great example of being successful in appointing an exceptional female in a C-suite position through making an intentional effort.
As a leader, how do you balance innovation and risk-taking with maintaining stability and growth for the company?
Yeah, and it's a great question. And I think that's the crux of the balance. How do you continue to drive growth and innovate and stay ahead of the competition in the current market environment while also driving operational efficiency in a growth model? And so when I think about those two things, I try to think of them together. I'm a big and person, so it's not innovation or efficiency or growth or profitability. It's an and. And so I'm thinking, for example, in, you know, product innovation, how can we continue to build the next part of our roadmap and also do it more efficiently? How can we leverage some of the newer technologies? You know, we've been using machine learning models for a while now, with obviously Gen AI and some other opportunities to help to just do things better and faster. And how do we make sure that we're focusing on both? And so for me, and this is something that, you know, me with my exec team and extended leadership team, really thinking about our key initiatives and how they are driving growth, always giving kind of amazing experiences for our customers and the 17 million employees that touch our platform, while also driving internal operational efficiency. And I think at our size and scale, for me, it's a must, and you have to be able to do both. And I think perhaps it's because I had that Enron experience and kind of an unmeasured, very unbalanced. I'm quite conscious of making sure that there's, you know, the top line growth opportunity in addition to continuing to drive the bottom line.
In your opinion, what are some of the most significant trends or challenges facing the HR and employee engagement space today?
I think one of the biggest one is just the composition of the workforce. Some of our companies have three generations of workers. And if you think about somebody who's very early in their career and someone who is much more mature in their career, and just the way that we need to engage with them, and this is very much something that we're seeing, we have a whole kind of digital first cohort of employees who are joining the workforce. They're not even used to an email, right? They want a scrolling feed. They want an Instagram feed. They want something that's, you know, that's highly visual, that's a lot of video, that is, they can get what they need really quickly. And so we're really thinking and helping to connect those kind of early in their career type of employees and make sure that they have the technology to get the information they need, whether it's to onboard them or help them within a training, help them understand a strategic initiative of the company. And again, perhaps in a different way of someone who, you know, might be three or four decades, even five decades in their career. And we always talk about meeting people where they are with what they need. And so, you know, yes, that means whether it's, are you on a mobile app? Are you on your desktop? Are you inside of Teams or email or a screen? Those are ways to think about how we're meeting people where they are, but it's really about a hyper-personalized experience that they get that helps them kind of understand whatever the information is that they can consume it in a way that works for them. And so I think as we kind of continue to navigate that shift in the workforce, it's going to be more and more important to really find that connection with our people and make sure that they do feel engaged and with their employer and really understand the purpose and the meaning of their work. I think that's, you know, obviously another trend with the generation who's entering work. They do want to have an impact and they want to know that the work they're doing is connected to a larger meaning. So I think that's kind of the other piece on the generational aspect.
Yeah, I can certainly see that. I know the office-based workforce since COVID, we've seen many companies adopt a remote-first approach, which can be great for many of us. But I know for young graduates entering the workforce, it can be challenging. So it's really good to hear that generational piece there.
Looking ahead, what are your aspirations and goals for First Up in the next few years? And how do you envision the company evolving and making an impact on the industry?
I think that we have, I mean, such an amazing path ahead. And if we just look at our customer base and just continuing to grow what we're doing and the impact that we are providing for our large customers, you know, it's BBC and Amazon and GSK and Ford and Boeing and all of those companies, which is interesting, are going through their own transformation of how are we navigating in this next environment. And they're using our platform to do that and to make sure that all of their people are connected, making sure that they're brought along on that new strategic journey. And so that for me is really, really interesting. And then as we continue to grow, you know, an employee experience is become a really hot space. If you think about every CEO needs to be able to, first of all, reach all of their employees and give them the information they need in the moment that they need it. And really thinking about providing those personalized experiences at scale. And that's the huge opportunity for us. We're just still early days of really capturing the value to employers. If you think about what we're starting to learn about using data and making sure that we're kind of understanding what makes different parts of our workforce tick and how can we help and guide them through in their journey. So for me, I'm just super excited about kind of where the market is going and our position leading that market. And, you know, the next couple of years, it's from 100 to 250. And for me, as long as our customers are satisfied and thrilled and delighted with our platform, our people love working at First Up and they find it exceptional place to work. And then of course, that's growing the value of the company and delivering a return to shareholders. So of course, any CEO needs to focus on shareholder value. And one of the things that I am proud of, every employee at First Up does have ownership in the company. So we give everybody shares. One of our core values is we are all owners and we really are. And so everyone is part of that increase in shareholder value as we continue to drive value for our customers.
Yeah, great answer. I mean, your commitment to both your customers and your employees is really clear, and you can't go far wrong with that philosophy for sure. It's a really interesting question coming up next, which, you know, I'm particularly keen to hear your insights on. Work-life balance is often a struggle for many professionals, especially for, you know, CEOs and C-level professionals. How have you and how do you personally manage that balance with three young boys? And what advice would you give to others that are striving for it?
So first, I don't believe in balance, meaning I think it's impossible to achieve. So I look at it as finding peace and finding moments of peace and deep connection and cherishing those moments. So if it's something, you know, playing basketball with one of my sons and being very immersed in that moment, that's what I'll focus on, you know, on the weekend. And then I'll get on a call with someone on my exec team and solve, you know, whatever we're working on then. So for me, it's again, trying to focus on those moments and be able to be very, very present in those moments. And I think it's something that everyone needs to understand kind of what gives them energy and what gives them joy. I obviously get so much from my family. And so we need to make sure that I'm getting those special moments. It doesn't need to be every moment. And I've missed conferences and I've missed certain things at school, but I do prioritize the things that matter. I won't travel on my boy's birthday. So that's something that I drew a hard line on, and I've made that work. And then, you know, I get a lot of energy from my friends, and I'm fortunate that I have friends from different parts of my life who live all over the world. And so when I'm traveling and when I'm in London, I can also have a coffee with a friend or get together with a group of friends. And so being able to, even on a work trip, when I am away from my family, being able to have that connection, that's something that is personal to me, but it really does help me continue to find those moments of peace.
Yeah, really interesting insights. And it's a bit of a shame to hear there's no magic formula, but it's great insights. Thank you. Have you had any mentors or role models who have influenced your leadership style or approach?
Yeah, I think for me, it's not one or one person, especially because I've been kind of early doing my own thing. I had my only woman boss was at Enron, actually. And so I really did look up to her, and she taught me lessons just in being exactly who you are and being able to navigate how to be hard driving and set the bar really, really high and do it in a way that people really respect you and it works with your personality. So that was someone early in my career. And then kind of throughout, I've been really fortunate to have a group of different types of people, whether it's other founders, other CEOs, investors, and basically different people who I could call on for different types of things. And whether it's to say, you know, here's my situation, what are my blind spots, or, you know, I know you've navigated this type of situation, can you help me work through? So for me, I've found value in having that network and also being able to get different perspectives as well.
Yeah, you've sought out advice from people that you know who have going to be able to add value to your situation or have been through something similar, but not necessarily had a kind of one mentor throughout your career.
Mm-hmm.
How do you define success, both personally and for First Up? And has your definition of success evolved over time?
For me personally, it is about delivering impact. And so I think that's something that I will always continue to strive for. I don't know if that's ever done. So I think that is perhaps a continuous journey. And I think professionally, I think it's back to, are we continuing to provide value to our customers? Am I giving our employees an amazing employee experience? And am I continuing to grow the value of the company for shareholders? I think for me, as long as those things are happening, that is success. And so it's not necessarily, you know, I need to achieve X and then I'm done, because life just doesn't work that way. Companies don't work that way, right? It's always kind of growing and evolving. And so for me, I don't look at it as, oh, I'm changing the guidepost. It's more about the level of impact is more, and the contribution from both personally and professionally, what we're doing at First Up, we just continue to grow how we are impacting the employees who use our technology every day to get what they need, to the leaders who are able to really help to manage key organizational initiatives in a way that they haven't been able to do before. And so for me, success is just having more. It's, I think it goes back to impact.
Wonderful. And finally, what legacy do you hope to leave through your work at First Up?
Yeah, look, I want First Up to be a name that every CEO says, I can't possibly manage my company to my top line initiatives or my bottom line without the First Up platform, without the ability to send campaigns to people and get the data to really understand where I have opportunities and risk at the business. And so for me, that would be success. And that's something that, you know, we're there with a lot of our customers. And I think that continues to be the opportunity.
Brilliant. Well, look, thank you so much for your insights today. I think now we're going to finish off with a quick fire round of 5 questions and you need to answer quickly with the first answer that comes to mind. Are you ready?
Ready.
What's your favorite book?
Okay, so it's 2, but by the same author. So The Hard Things About Hard Things, this is by Ben Horowitz. I think every CEO needs to read that book. And he also wrote a book called What You Do Is Who You Are, around culture and business. So those are 2 books that I've actually reread.
Great. Well, there are 2 to go on my list for sure. Snow or sun?
Sun.
Early bird or night owl?
Early bird.
Tea or coffee?
Coffee.
And our final question, if you could have dinner with any historical figure, who would it be?
Cleopatra.
Oh, wow. That's a good one.
A woman leading. And I think that would just be fascinating to ask her all sorts of questions.
Nicole, thank you so much for coming on. Your story as a founder is truly empowering.
Great. Thanks so much for having me, Christine. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to this episode of She Says Unplugged. I hope it inspired you in your personal journey. If you enjoyed listening, please subscribe and share this episode with others. You can find out more about She Says at our website, shesays.org. You can also find us on LinkedIn.